Welcome everyone to the May meeting of the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development for the City of Tucson. I would like to call the meeting to order. The Commission on Equitable Housing and Development meeting has now commenced. It is May 1st at 4 p.m. Well, it's actually 4:05 p.m. This is a virtual meeting. We ask that you mute yourselves until called upon to speak to avoid feedback and background noise. For those who have dialed in using the call-in number, to unmute to speak, dial *6 on your phone and only use the chat function to request to speak. Also, to comply with the state open meeting law, attendance and votes will be done by way of roll call using audio. All right, I am going to do the roll call now. Maggie Amado-Tellez, Marianne Beerling, Mindy Bernstein,
present.
Mark Clark.
He's retired.
Mark Clark is retired. Vicky Cusino.
Here.
Serena Warake. Lori Mazurbo.
Present.
Tisha Tallman.
Here.
Jim Toefel. I know he's going to be absent. Ray Winch. I know Ray is
here.
Yeah, thanks. Kenny Wong?
Present.
Alan Sola?
Present.
Jay Young, that is me, I'm here. Ex officio members, Ann Chineka? Corin Manning?
Present.
Marcos Ismail?
Present.
And Michael Edmonds?
Present.
All right, looks like we've got quorum, everybody. Thanks for joining. Now I would like to see if there are any edits or updates to the March meeting minutes. And if not, I will take a motion to approve the minutes.
Motion to approve minutes.
Do we have a second?
I second that.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed?
No.
All right. The meetings are, minutes are approved. So today we have our normal agenda, call to the audience. Then we'll spend about 35 minutes on the mini retreat report outs. Then we have the presentation from the Tucson Pima Collaboration to End Homelessness for about 30 minutes. The Pima County Housing Initiatives, this is a new agenda item that just kind of popped up this week that we need to address. We've got 25 minutes for that. Then 10 minutes for our Housing Trust Fund updates. And then city, county, and working group updates for a few minutes. At the end, about 5 minutes, and then next steps for 5 minutes, and then hopefully we will adjourn by 6 o'clock. So with that, yeah, Kenny, go ahead. I also heard somebody's hand pop up, so if anybody's got anything, go ahead.
Yeah, I apologize. I realize the calendar invitation I have still has us from 4 to 5, so I'm double booked at 5 and we'll need to step out then.
Okay. How many folks do we have now for voting members for quorum? I know that we had enough, but how many do we have? Are we going to have quorum if Kenny leaves is my question.
Yeah,
we have quorum. Right, okay, great. Anything else before we move on to the call to the audience? All right, now we will do the call to the audience. It is limited to 3 minutes per speaker and a total of 10 minutes. All speakers must share their name to be recorded in the meeting minutes. And please remember, the call to the audience may not result in discussion with members of CEHD. No legal action may take place during the call to the audience and speakers may not be disruptive. CEHD members may only respond to criticism and request that items be placed on a future agenda for discussion. And finally, members of the audience may still participate on agenda items as per the bylaws of CEHD. So with that, is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak?
It looks like Ben Bueller Garcia wants to speak. He has his hand up and he is ready. He is unmuted. Whenever you're ready, Ben.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Ben Bueller Garcia on behalf of the Arizona Multi-Housing Association. I see you have it on your agenda later tonight, but also wanted to make you aware the mayor and council are considering an impact fee increase of up to 40% for new residential development here in the city of Tucson. And I hate to come in here and keep sounding like the canary in the coal mine, but it's starting to look like the death of a thousand cuts out here in the development community between the EV ordinance, which adds another $500,000 to the cost of your average 200 unit apartment complex. One of your own members, Jim Tolfel, estimated that the some of the building code amendments could add anywhere from $10,000 to $25,000 per door for new apartment development here in Tucson, of course. So I just encourage you to keep track. And by the way, it's my understanding that staff is recommending changes to the building codes that will significantly mitigate those costs. We're very grateful about that. But just want to let you know it's getting more and more difficult with the regulatory costs to build multifamily housing within the city limits. You add that to, you know, the financing costs out there right now, the cost of construction materials. And I just encourage this commission to continue to track that information. If we want to build more housing in Tucson, we need to make sure that it's not too expensive to build more housing in Tucson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bueller Garcia, for those comments. We appreciate it. Anybody else in the audience, Rachel, would like to speak?
I'm not seeing any hands raised yet.
All right. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak before we move on to the next agenda item? Okay, hearing none, let's move on to the next agenda item, which is mini retreat report outs. Basically, the purpose here is to summarize the retreat outcomes with the selected focus areas, which we came up with three, which are prevention, housing options, and services. And I believe in our packets, Brian Manwaring, who helped facilitate the meeting, gave us some tips about kind of how to structure our report outs. So some potential things to talk about, the each group's objective and desired and or desired outcomes, the tasks and timeline, particularly for the next 3 to 6 months, any information needs, including thoughts for future presentations and speakers, collaboration and partnership opportunities, and needs or resources for the group to complete its action plan, including thoughts about other members that might be helpful to include. So those are just some of the ideas there. So let's see, what were the three groups? I don't have them off the top of my head. Does somebody have them off the top of their head?
Rachel, can you pull up the...
I think I might have it. I'm looking at page 18 of the 81-page packet. It lists housing options, Serena and Marianne, prevention, Jay, Kenny, me, and Ray, and services, Tisha, Ann, Michael, Vicky, Laura, and Mindy. You want me to put that in the chat?
Let's see, you said page 18. Scroll down. Yeah, maybe put it in the chat, Alan. That would be great.
I just did a screenshot, seems easiest.
So which of the groups would like to take the first stab?
Hey, Alan, I'm not sure if we can put screenshots, like images,
like
in the chat.
It doesn't let me do that, so I'll just copy and paste.
Thank you.
I thought that was, I tried it twice and it wasn't working, and so there we go. That's easier.
Great, thank you. Appreciate that. So housing options was Serena and Marianne. Was there, I don't think either of them are here today. Is there anyone else that was in that group that could potentially report out? Doesn't sound like it. Why don't we go with prevention? Kenny, Alan, and Ray and myself were part of that group. Alan or Kenny or Ray, do you guys have a summary, or could you get us started on some of the things we talked about and where we're going, where we hope to go?
I can get us started. You know, thanks for Ray for putting together a lot of the notes from the conversation. You know, prevention, we talked quite a bit in broad strokes around keeping folks from falling into housing insecurity and homelessness. So a lot of the discussion was around, you know, things around eviction prevention. Thinking a bit about like the bigger picture of our context, a lot of interest in a postmortem around Prop of 414, what we're learning about, you know, the city and the community's response to that, and what are palatable solutions that can be supported, and some of the narrative around homelessness and the risks around falling into that situation. So there's, you know, we had a really generative discussion around both the narrative piece, potential supports, and ideas for different partnerships to explore further.
I guess to add to that, some of the things that we talked about included changes at the state level, knowing that, well, that's not in the power of mayor and council to decide, recognizing that we put a lot of energy in trying to mitigate harms that with a state level policy change, such as extending the amount of time that people have for eviction, implementing rent control, things that would take a lot of the burden off of the city to try to mitigate evictions and people losing their housing due to rising rents.
Thanks, Ray. Alan, do you have anything to add to?
I don't really. I was going to point out what Ray just pointed out, which is that that state legislation limits the city's ability to do things, rent control being the most obvious component of that. Eviction prevention is very difficult. I don't think we discussed this at our subcommittee meeting, but I recently listened to a podcast that emphasized cooperation before eviction between landlords and tenants. I didn't really gather a great way to do that, but the focus was that it's expensive to evict people, it's cheaper to keep them housed. And if landlords are on board with that, then maybe we could try to do that. I don't have a concept of how we do that locally, but it did seem like a pretty interesting suggestion that would be, has possible positive outcomes.
Thanks, Alan. And I think, you know, one of the things that just kind of maybe wrap up our little section here, you know, we did basically talk about kind of keeping the equitable housing solutions subcommittee as it was formed, basically keeping it intact and working through this issue of homelessness prevention. I do also want to take a step back just to give a little bit more context about the mini retreat. I realize that I kind of glossed over that, and obviously there's some folks here who were not part of the retreat. Basically, what we decided to do as a commission is regroup and have a mini retreat that was facilitated to help us narrow down the focus of the commission, because, you know, I think a lot of us were feeling like, you know, there's so many things to deal with in the housing space. It has been hard to focus in on anything in particular and really move the ball forward. So, you know, we decided beforehand on some potential topics to really focus in on, We looked at evictions, gentrification, zoning, funding issues, affordable housing supply, measuring equity, and obviously homelessness. And, you know, I think we anticipated that, you know, a decent part of the meeting, the mini retreat, was going to be taken up by trying to figure out what issue we really wanted to focus on. And one thing that really surprised me was how quickly we really landed on the issue of homelessness as being really the top issue to deal with, and also an issue that we could potentially deal with effectively and have some impact. So then we basically spent the second half of the meeting breaking up into small groups around the three focus areas that we mentioned. So we were just reporting out on the prevention focus group. Since we had the mini retreat, we have not met as a full commission, and I don't believe any of the groups have met. So we're trying to take this time to regroup and just kind of refresh our memories about the mini retreat, where we got in our small groups, and then to think about next steps about how we, you know, meet in our small groups and move the ball forward. I think we also really decided that we wanted to, you know, after this meeting, our regular meetings going forward, that we wanted to dedicate at least half of our meeting to dealing with the issue of homelessness, reporting out on our groups, and just having time to be able to deliberate about the issue and kind of, you know, how we can have an impact and things of that nature. So that's just the context of what we're talking about now and why we're talking about these three groups that came out of the mini retreat. So with that, let's see. Obviously, housing options. There's nobody from that group here today. We just did prevention. And the final group is services, which was Tisha, Ann, Michael, Vicky, Lori, and Mindy. So I don't know who the spokesperson for that group is, or if you would all like to take a chance. But anyway, y'all are up.
Tisha, do you have your notes with you? Because I didn't.
I do. Okay. I do, Michael. So yeah, I can go ahead and start us off. Please fill in any blanks that y'all recall. But we wanted the services to include behavioral health services. Services on eviction prevention would include rent and utility assistance and flex funding, transitional housing, and also any services related to harm reduction, including decriminalizing homelessness. I think with the grants pass, United States Supreme Court case, that there is this undertone of awareness and hopefully some resistance to decriminalizing outdoor sleeping. Anyone else?
No, you did.
Tisha, you said hope resisting decriminalization. I think you meant it the other way around.
Correct, Alan.
Anyone else from the services group have any additional information to share? Yeah, go ahead, Mindy.
Thank you. I'm beginning to do some more research regarding how behavioral health services have. I'm getting more curious to get more hard data on where behavioral health care services are broken, not working, and hope to bring that to our smaller group or just for myself to be able to report back to the commission. I have some information, but not a lot. It goes back to the state defunding behavioral health care. So it's a state issue. And a federal issue now as well. But, I will get back more information as it comes in.
Thanks, Mindy. Anyone else? All right. So as I mentioned, obviously we have not gotten together in our small groups since the mini retreat. So I think the next step really is for the small groups to convene. And I don't remember if we decided that we would keep the same subcommittee times that we have had and try and kind of shoehorn our new kind of small groups into those meeting times, or if we have decided to look at new meeting times. I don't know, Tisha and company, do you guys remember kind of where we left off and what the groups decided to do going forward now that we're, you know, we have our groups and need to get to work?
Well, I think maybe as a next step, we could probably decide if there's a subcommittee that would like to take any one of these issues. I think that would, might be a good starting point.
Yeah, that's great. So the housing prevention group, I mean, the homelessness prevention group that was me, Kenny, Alan, and Ray. Kenny and Ray and I were already in the equitable housing subcommittee. So I would propose that the equitable housing subcommittee take on prevention, and then we would just add Alan to our group if Alan is amenable to that. Tisha, is your subcommittee mostly made up of folks that were part of the services group from the retreat?
Not everyone, but I would love to take on everyone who was. It would make for a more robust discussion in that subcommittee, if y'all don't mind, the Housing First subcommittee.
Yeah, Alan was going to join us.
Was last,
I? Yeah.
I'm not sure I knew that. I don't remember that.
I'll give you a false memory then.
Yeah, it's Elena too, I believe.
I think you could be on both.
I don't know if I mind that or not, but it depends when meetings are and all that, you know, subject to my schedule. But I'm interested in Housing First as a topic. It's a one that I'm really interested in. So I would like to be involved in that.
Great.
Wonderful.
Jay, I'd like to stay on the Equitable Housing Subcommittee.
Perfect. So we will keep Lori as well. As far as housing options, that seems like it matches up pretty well with, I think the third subcommittee is affordable housing. So is Jim still the chair of that subcommittee? I think he is, isn't he? If he is, I can talk to him about taking that on. I imagine that would work out okay. I just heard a hand pop.
Just FYI, so Jim is on as an attendee on his phone. And I think that's his hand. And then there's also something in the chat that Ben Bueller Garcia has something to add. It's
okay, Jim, are you on? If that's you, go ahead.
Jim, I think you have to dial *6. There you go.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hey, everyone. Sorry I'm late. Having technical issues getting on. Yes, I am still leading that subcommittee. And I think we agreed to keep our time the same.
Right. And Jim, you're willing to take on the housing options group from the mini retreat?
Yes.
Great. And then you said there was somebody else's who had their hand raised?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Ben Bueller Garcia at the AMA again. I don't know if it's allowable to comment on this.
Sure.
Permission to proceed. Okay. Just want to let you know also on the upcoming study session, item number 4, we've been working with Council Member Cunningham on what I think is a pretty innovative program. He's calling it the House Program, HAUS. And basically, it's an initiative where the city, it's kind of a pilot project where the city would sort of backstop in order to allow those people who are in transitional housing to get into apartments, but just can't quite get over that hump of, you know, first and last month's rent deposit, renter's insurance, credit checks, those sorts of things. So in effect, the city would be kind of guaranteeing these leases to get those folks out and into apartments on the private sector side. Our pledge would be to maintain the rent at a standard level, at the existing level, for at least 1 year. So it's something you might want to look into. I think if that can take off, that would help address at least some of the folks' problems of getting them out of transition. And these are folks who are working, who are earning an income already, but they, like I said, they just can't get over that barrier of that's necessary to get into their own lease for an apartment. So I think it's something pretty interesting. Y'all might want to look into it.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing that. Appreciate that. So it sounds like basically at this point, the subcommittees are going to stay the same. And it sounds like essentially keep the same meeting times that you have had. I know at least for my subcommittee, Equitable Housing Strategies, we have been going back and forth a little bit about our meeting time. And I don't know that we ever settled on that. I think I kind of let that slide while we were working on the mini retreat. So I will regroup with the Equitable Housing Subcommittee and try and find a time that works for everyone. And if you were not at the mini retreat but are at the meeting now and are a commissioner, you know, obviously you can stick with the subcommittee you've been working with or work with another one. So I'll just kind of leave that up to everyone who maybe hasn't chosen a group or would like to switch based on the groups that came out of the mini retreat. So with that, are there any other thoughts, questions, comments about the mini retreat report out and kind of where we go from here as subcommittees and as our small groups from the mini retreat? If not, we can move on to the next agenda item. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the presentation from the Tucson Pima Collaboration to End Homelessness. Is Kat Davis with us?
Indeed, I
am. All right, Kat, you are up.
Started. Perfect. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me today. I am going to go ahead and try and share some slides. Let's see here. One second. Hopefully you can see the slides now.
Yes,
we can see them.
Perfect. All right, well, thank you so much for having me today. I'm going to minimize the chat, so feel free to unmute yourself, or we'll have some time for some questions and discussion at the end as well. But my name is Kat Davis. I'm the Continuum of Care Lead Team Manager here at the City of Tucson's Housing and Community Development Department. I'm really excited to discuss TPCH and our strategic planning process. I have provided some slides that are linked in the detailed agenda that are a more in-depth look into TPCH. I'm going to give kind of a higher level overview today so that we can get a bit more into strategic planning. So the continuum of care programs are required by HUD, and they're designed to be a regional planning body that allocates resources, bridges clients to services, and also creates a coordinated entry system to assess, prioritize, and match people to housing. So this program design really puts a lot of the decision-making into the community's hands about how to best create and tailor a homelessness response system for our community. So locally, our continuum of care is known as the Tucson Pima Collaboration to End Homelessness. So COC and TPCH are interchangeable names for the same thing. So TPCH's responsibility is at systems level homelessness response. So their responsibilities can be broken down into these five different pillars of resource allocation, needs assessment, which we do through data and our gaps analysis, planning, including our strategic planning, evaluation of those strategies through performance monitoring and other written standards, and then also infrastructure, so building and maintaining support systems and processes to keep our homeless response system functioning. So TPCH is a self-governed body, and they're governed through the governance charter and policies that are upheld through the general council and the board. So they don't directly report to either the mayor and council or the Pima County Board of Supervisors or county administrator. But this slide shows sort of how they fit in with other local homeless system response partners. And so the elected officials at the city and county create policies around funding decisions and how homelessness will be addressed. And then those decisions and those programs are implemented through programs like our Housing First program here at HCD, or through Community Workforce and Development at Pima County. And so it's similar with TPCH in that the General Council, the board, and committees all kind of share varying levels of authority, but the decisions that they make are then carried out by the member agencies, which are many housing service providers and also some aligned service providers. And they're the ones who are really implementing that the policies and those decisions that are made through TPCH. So the city and county also participate in TPCH as housing service providers. So they're implementing the work of both, the city, the mayor and council, as well as Pima County and TPCH. So if you think about housing as really a spectrum of options and resources, TPCH has some level of authority over services that are designed specifically for people experiencing homelessness. So this is based on different levels of authority given to them through HUD. So within the homelessness landscape, there are a lot of different funding options that are braided together to provide resources in our community. The continuum of care funding specifically provides supportive housing. So there's other funding like our Emergency Solutions Grant or ESG that partially funds some homelessness prevention outreach services to people experiencing homelessness, some emergency shelters, as well as rapid rehousing. But there's other funding in our community that also really contributes to funding these resources in our community, including the community block grant funding, HOPLA, our city general fund that is given through the PCHIP grant making process and allocated to other community agencies that way, as well as state funding through DES and ADOH, and also philanthropic funding. So all of those different funding sources are braided together to be able to provide these services in our community. So as I mentioned, COC funding is really intended for people who are experiencing homelessness. So TPCH has criteria, eligibility criteria for their programs that's based on HUD's definitions of homelessness. So to receive supportive housing services through COC funding, someone must be either literally homeless, a youth between the ages of 18 and 24 that are facing imminent homelessness within the next 14 days, or for people who are fleeing or attempting to flee domestic violence but don't have the resources to obtain their own permanent housing. So these are the folks that that TPCH is really serving, and people who are maybe just back on their rent or they need some low-income housing options, those folks are better served through other parts of the spectrum of housing options, such as through prevention funding or through public housing. So I'm going to just pause there to see if there's any questions before moving on to talk about TPCH's strategic plan. So any questions about that? Looks like Mindy has a hand up. Go ahead, Mindy.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
So the employment services that you are working, that you provide, are through Sullivan Jackson?
Yeah, so there's various agencies that are member agencies of TPCH that provide employment services, but Sullivan Jackson is one of them. Yes.
Okay. Do you have involvement with RSA, Rehab Services Administration, Voc Rehab?
I'm not familiar with RSA personally. Yeah.
I would love to share lots of information with you about.
Perfect. Yeah, that sounds great. I will put my email in the chat, and you're more than welcome to reach out to me, and we can chat about all those services. Yeah.
And okay. And with the COC funding, do you also work with individuals with disabilities?
Yes. So to qualify for permanent supportive housing, people have to have a diagnosed disability. And so, yes, those services are actually, really specifically for that population.
Thank you.
I thought I saw perhaps another hand.
Yeah, hi, Kat. It's
Hi,
Tisha.
Tiffa. How are
Good.
you?
How are you?
Good.
Good. I've made some assumptions about how TPCH is funded, but I might be wrong. So I thought I'd just ask. I guess I assumed that the city had funded TPCH, but that might only be partially true, or whether it's coming from HUD directly.
So it's coming from HUD directly. So the continuum of care funding, there's another slide that's in the slide deck that's linked on the agenda that shows who all receives the continuum of care funding. And so in our situation, the city is the collaborative applicant. So we're submitting everybody's applications to HUD, but then HUD is directly contracting with all the agencies for funding. So the funding doesn't go through us. But the city receives funding as a housing service provider, but we also receive funding from HUD for to be the lead agency for the COC. And so we get some funding that's basically what funds the work that my team does at HCD to do the operations and administration of TPCH. So the city is not funding TPCH, but is rather being funded by the COC.
I got it. And then, with that in mind, is TPCH concerned with the potential cuts to COC funding moving forward by the administration?
Yes, that's a great question. And I know Anne and Allison are here, so please feel free to hop in anytime. But this is something that we've been really keeping a close eye on. It appears that the funding for this year has not at this point been cut. And by this year, I mean this next fiscal year. Unfortunately, because of all of the direct contracting with HUD, all the agencies have kind of different start dates. A lot of them don't start till October 1 as their fiscal year start. Our funding starts July 1. Some funding starts in May. So there's not one start date, but it does appear that the contracts have come out for the May start date agencies. We have not yet received ours, but by all appearances, funding for this next fiscal year has not been cut. But yeah, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily secure or that the COC program design is secure for the next several years. There could be some major changes.
So you're under the federal contracting period then?
So our new contract won't start till July 1, so we haven't signed that. So we're still under last year's funding currently.
Gotcha. Thank you. Very helpful. Thanks, Kat.
Oh, Alan, it looks like you have a question.
Pretty much the same as just what Tisha was just talking about. And but more specifically, I didn't hear you mention anything about Section 8 vouchers, and I've read that they're talking about trying to cut that. And I don't know what's happening, so I just wondered if you know more than I do, which I know everything.
Yeah, so let me go back a couple slides here. This is, low-income housing options. So housing choice vouchers and public housing is actually under the authority of our public housing authority, which is separate from TPCH or the Continuum of Care. So they have different funding, different authority. But I don't know if Anne or anyone is here that can speak to those cuts, but
yes. Well, I can tell you not helpful information. So Ellen, I New York Times ran an article recently about potential cuts to the voucher program. We have not heard anything related to that yet. I do think what's interesting is for years, and this actually goes back about a decade, HUD has been trying to move public housing authorities away from public housing to the Section 8 platform. So it's sort of an interesting, it'll be interesting to see how it evolves, but we have not heard anything in any sort of formal capacity yet.
Okay, well, that's interesting in itself. It's in the New York Times, but you don't know anything about it more than that. So, okay.
All right. If you all are ready, I'm going to move on to a bit more about our strategic planning process. So TPCH is creating a new strategic plan right now. We're in the process of doing that. We have a strategic plan that ends this year. And so right now we're really in the engagement stage. So we're pretty early. Our hope is to have the plan published and adopted in February of 2026, which is our first 2026 general council meeting. So we're pretty early in this process, but we've done some engagement with our program managers, our direct service staff, some executives, as well as the TPCH board. And then this month, that's expanding a bit to TPCH committees, as well as some elected officials, and then today with you all on the commission. So during this process, we've also done a lit review of a lot of other plans from the region, including the Prosperity Initiative, Plan Tucson, the PCHIP plan, as well as some other local plans and HUD's strategic plan. So we're looking for those points of alignment with the priorities that already exist in our community. We'll be working with elected officials throughout May and June. And then on June 3rd, I will be at the study session with the mayor and council. So I know that you all just adopted your three priorities. And so I wanted to share some information with you from our different feedback sessions that we've had so far. So we are not at the point yet where we've identified new priorities and goals and things like that. We're still receiving feedback from TPCH and others. And so from the different priority areas that you've identified, I have gone through the feedback we've received so far and found some things that kind of align with your different priority areas. So for homelessness prevention, some of our strengths that were mentioned include supportive services for folks who are low income or maybe facing housing instability, including our free medical clinics in town, Narcan distribution to those struggling with addiction, as well as home ownership and home rehabilitation programs. It's important to note that most of those programs do not receive COC funding. Those are kind of outside of the main work that we're doing through the COC funding, but these are just resources that exist in our community, essentially. Some of the weaknesses that we have include limited employment, behavioral health, and substance abuse support. So those were mentioned many times, as well as a general lack of prevention funding. There's not a really consistent federal source for prevention funding. And so, as I mentioned, there's a lot of braiding together of funding sources, and prevention in particular relies heavily on philanthropic funding. So expanding that funding, available gap funding and prevention funding is a big opportunity for our community to be able to prevent homelessness. There are a lot of threats that were related to federal concerns, as you all have shared today as well. So if people are kind of barely holding on to their stability and they've got governmental support like Medicaid or food stamps, then cuts to those programs could, you know, have a really big increase in impact on homelessness in our community. There's also a lot of fear among immigrants, whether they're documented or undocumented. And beyond that, just the persistent rates of poverty in our community, as well as eviction rates, are a threat for stable housing. For homeless services, there's a lot of feedback in this area because that's a lot of the work that we do. So there's a lot of strength. Many of those sit with our workforce, which makes sense. They're the backbone of the work that we do. So they're hardworking, experienced, they're strong case managers and outreach staff. Other notable strengths include utilizing a housing first model, which I know aligns with what the commission supports. And then also are a lot of services for youth. So despite strong collaboration, many service gaps still remain. Including support for domestic violence, although we do have a new housing project that is starting in this next fiscal year. That's a new project funded through COC funding for additional domestic violence support. So that's good news. Specific medical care like vision and dental care, as well as things like child care, skill building for our clients, and employment services are all listed as some weaknesses and areas where services could be increased and improved. There are a lot of opportunities like creating more centralized services. This is not what TPCH has been doing for the past several years. We have a pretty decentralized system as far as shelters, our coordinated entry system are all decentralized. So it seems to like there's some interest in centralizing some of those systems, improving 24/7 accessibility, and making those a bit easier to navigate. There's also an opportunity potentially to diversify funding. I think obviously agencies are really concerned about potential cuts to federal funding, so trying to diversify a bit and not rely on any one source. Improving faith-based partnerships is also an opportunity, as well as some pro-social engagement to support the well-being of our clients. And then there are threats that are also mentioned about our workforce. They kind of show up in every area. So low pay, high staff vacancies, high caseloads, and burnout are all really big concerns for our workforce. We heard a lot of concerns about the political changes and priorities, feeling like there's a departure from TPCH's values when it comes to providing homeless services. And then also just the ever-present need for additional mental health care and substance use support. And then the last one for housing options, we had a bit less feedback here just due to the nature of our work. But that said, the strengths include having youth shelters and safe havens available in our community. Also, an inadequate amount of permanent supportive housing is seen as a big weakness. While these housing options aren't probably something that you're used to working with, of thinking a shelter as a housing option. We also mentioned safe zones, sanctioned camps, and other increased shelter availability as weaknesses. So there's opportunity in housing options, particularly shared housing, which is something that we don't really do, putting multiple people in one unit. It's also not something that is widely done with the voucher program outside of families. And so looking into shared housing and exploring that more in our community, I think, is a big opportunity, as well as engaging more with our landlords, and then other more innovative housing options like micro housing. And then the threats are things that we all have probably already been mentioned before, but evictions, high rates of rent increases, and just insufficient supply of affordable housing and housing vouchers for our community's needs. So that kind of outlines the feedback that we received about your three priorities. But as I mentioned, we haven't identified our own new priorities yet. But besides what we've already talked about, these are some of the themes that have kind of come out during our engagement sessions. So again, our strengths really lying with our people, good staff, good collaboration, connecting folks to services, and working as a community to respond to the complex needs of people experiencing homelessness. Weaknesses include many service and resource gaps, including affordable housing, as well as adequate support for our staff. And then there's also some quality improvement things from our coordinated entry system, our move-on strategy, which is kind of how people move through the different housing services that we provide. Resource mapping, just even understanding what sits with what agency, I think it would be very helpful for our community. Opportunities include improving our workforce support through different innovations, shifting some of our practices, as well as finding new resources and deeper engagement with our service providers. These threats, again, are things that we've mostly spoken about, but changing policies and an ongoing homelessness crisis, there's been more public perception of homelessness that can be harmful. Also, changes in local, state, and federal policies can have a significant impact. So those are some of the themes that have kind of come out of the work that we've already done. And that's really all I have to share with you today. But if we have a few more minutes, then I am going to stop sharing my slides. But I would love to use this remaining time to have a short discussion on just homelessness priorities. I know one of your roles is advising the mayor and council. I mentioned I'll also be presenting to mayor and council on June 3rd. And so what are some specific areas or priorities where the commission and TPCH can align, or information that we're providing to mayor and council to really reinforce similar messages to them? So I'm going to go ahead and stop sharing. If I can. Oh, it's been stopped. Okay, great. And so you're welcome to use the chat. Go ahead and put ideas in the chat as well as raising your hands. I thought I saw a hand raised.
I think Jim has his hand raised on his phone. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
All right. Hey. Thank you for the presentation. I apologize. I'm not able to see the slides. So it's a little bit hard to follow along with some of it, but we were talking about TCP, the TPCH at the retreat, because one of the things we were doing is we were looking at what other cities were doing to address homelessness. And the city of Houston, one of the things that they had done was to basically establish a database of all the different service providers, what they do, and then when somebody reached out, they basically, that database directed them to the services that were most applicable. And what they found is that there was a lot of duplication of services, overlap, and then other services weren't being adequately used. Is that, so a couple of people said that that's part of what you guys do. Is that really true, or is that something that's kind of part of your strategic plan looking forward, or is it not part of it at all?
Yeah, so I think, you know, our the member agencies of TPCH, most of them have outreach teams, as well as the city's Housing First program and some staff over at Pima County as well. Everybody has outreach staff. They're always constantly looking for new resources and building those connections with community agencies to kind of find out, like, who is doing what. I would agree that we don't have a database, and that resource mapping is something that would be beneficial for our community. We'd love to get something like that on our website to be able to, you know, provide that information. We are currently working on updating the website with some resources to kind of build a bit of it's not really a database, but just a collection of resources that people can go to. But I think that doing that more intentionally would be positive. I don't know if that fully answered your question, but our agencies know of a lot of resources. There isn't, as far as I'm aware, one centralized kind of repository for that information.
David, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, in terms of going back to your first slide around the five pillars of responsibility for the TPCH, and the need to, one of them being planning and developing strategic plans, policies, and processes to address homelessness. Have there been discussions, as far as you know, at TPCH, at the board level or the committee levels, about how do we get out of the cycle of 1 year's funding to the next year's funding and more into, like, have we mapped out, like, which agencies in our community are doing X really, really well and we should ramp that up? Which agencies are doing Y really, really well and we should ramp that up? And a way to do sort of more collaborative planning around leaning into individual providers' areas of strength?
Yeah, so this is a little complicated and a bit of a yes and no. So yes, specifically to COC funding. So as far as like what agencies are doing kind of outside of that, not as much. But as I mentioned before, we're the collaborative applicant. So that means that we receive all of the applications for the COC funding from anyone in Pima County who wants to apply. Those applications all go to TPCH, and they have work groups that go through and do a rating and ranking system to come to the conclusion of like what we're actually submitting and what the rating is for all of those different housing projects. And a lot of the ratings process is based off of written standards and their performance metrics of those different projects in the past. Are they spending on their money? Or how many people are they serving? Things like that. How many bed vacancies do they have, et cetera? So we're looking at all of that performance metric data when rating and ranking the different projects. Then those ratings go with the application to the to HUD, and then HUD funds what they're going to fund based on that kind of rating and ranking system. There's different tiers. So all that to say, yes, there is some consideration with COC funding of like who is doing things well. We can reallocate funding between agencies or between projects. If one project is not going well, we can allocate it to a different agency, things like that. However, just to be really honest, there is some political complication there. So when it comes to saying like, okay, this agency is really good at stabilizing people in housing, so let's have them focus on that. And so we're going to reallocate their projects to another agency. Anytime an agency is maybe facing a shift in the funding that they're receiving, it can be stressful. And so just to say, we're just going to, you know, divide this money up really differently than it has been, could cause some problems. But at the same time, that is already happening to a certain extent through this annual NOFO process. But again, that's really specific to COC funding. So if you're talking about, you know, other services agencies are providing, or even like shelter services or something like that, that's outside of the COC funding, that same process isn't necessarily happening. I don't know if that helps at all.
But just so I'm clear, within that category of supportive housing, there's lots of different strategies and funding streams, right? Permanent supportive housing, transitional housing, et cetera. Is that an accurate understanding?
So within supportive housing, most of that is funded through COC housing. But within supportive housing, there is like rapid rehousing and permanent supportive housing. There's also transitional. We only have one in our community, but a transitional housing project and a safe haven project, a couple domestic violence projects that are both rapid rehousing. But yeah, there's various housing types and definitions within the umbrella of supportive housing. But most of that is COC funded. Some of it is funded through DES, DOJ. There are some other projects that exist in our community out that are not funded by COC. But primarily COC does fund most of the supportive housing in our community.
And it's about 10 or 11 million that comes in through the snowfall every year?
Yeah, so this next year, so starting this next fiscal year, we're getting 14.5 million. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. I see some questions in the chat. Are there more hands raised? Let me...
Looks like Ray's got a question. I also saw, Mindy, did you have your hand up as well?
I did, but David asked my question.
Okay, go ahead, Ray.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming and for your work in this presentation. Thinking about the question around the resource list, and I guess I work making resource lists and calling, supporting people to make the calls to these resources. And I think at the end of the day, it's not a matter of the list not existing. Like, yes, let's make the resource list. But most of the time when people call, there is not enough money. People call all of these places to try to get rental assistance and things, and it's not there. And which is not to blame any of these organizations for not having enough funding to make it happen. But wonder where you all are in the conversation of kind of those upstream solutions of slowing that stream into houselessness, whether that's policy change. I know I bring up rent control a lot. I know it's a like hard thing to have happen in the state, but also do think we can pour a lot of resources into the mitigation of harm and to not slowing that stream.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you asked that, teeing me up perfectly to talk about prevention. No, that's really important because we have a gaps analysis that you all, I think, are familiar with that Ciro published, and I think Keith Bentley might have come and presented at some point to you about the gaps analysis. But what that really shows is the number of people who need services in our community versus the number that are getting actually served. And with the funding and the resources that the COC or that comes into our community through COC funding, you know, that funding is generally stable. We did get a bit more money this year than we have in years past, but most of that increase is through cost of living increase. And so with pretty stable funding, there's a finite number of people that the continuum can serve. And so as the need increases, that ability to serve more people is not increasing at that same rate. And so we really see prevention as super important, very, very important to kind of turn down the tap on the number of people entering the system. The system is stressed. As you mentioned, there's just, to be frank, not enough resources anywhere across the system to serve the number of people who are requesting services. And so we really see prevention as an increasingly important way to prevent people from entering the system at all. And when we get prevention funding from the federal government, it's extremely limited. And the vast majority of the prevention funding in our community has come in through philanthropic sources. And so the struggle with that is it's not centralized. And so, like you said, you get a list of resources and you call this agency, they ran out of money. You call this other agency, you maybe don't qualify for their eligibility criteria. You call another agency, you have to apply on a specific day of the month. And so because that is all philanthropic funded, it's very decentralized and it's very difficult for not only the public, but also our case managers and our outreach workers to be able to really access the resource if it does exist in the community. And so we definitely see prevention as a weakness for our current homeless landscape, but a really big opportunity for improvement and a big need for our community.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I am probably out of time. Rachel, you're welcome to stop me.
You've got 6 minutes.
Okay.
So 5:15.
Does anybody else have any questions? I've got a couple if nobody else does. So I think you were kind of getting at this just now, Kat, but you know, obviously, like looking at your presentation, you've got the FY 2026 COC funding, you know, organizations that we've all heard of and I think know pretty well. How well does this COC funding chart that you have here capture all that's going on in homelessness, right? I think you mentioned philanthropic stuff, like there are other groups out there that are doing work around homelessness. Like how is that captured? And I mean, how much of the services and other things that are out there in the community are not captured by this COC funding? Is it like three times more, or is it just, you know, a small amount? Or
yeah, that's a really great question. There's definitely a lot that is not captured through COC funding. That you know, some of that does exist through state or federal funding, like I mentioned, DOJ or ADOH or DES funding that does fund some housing projects, mostly for specific populations. But I would say that is less than what exists through COC funding. But then if you start talking about all of the different funding brought in for shelters, all of the philanthropic funding brought in for prevention, outreach, all these different pieces, it depends how far out you go. Does this include also, you know, other wraparound services, behavioral health, Narcan, things like that? Are we including all of that? Then it's going to be much, much larger than what the COC funding captures. So it kind of depends like how big that umbrella is that you're looking for. I would say as far as like supportive housing specifically, COC funds most of it. But as far as like homeless services in general, then COC is definitely just a piece of that pie. It's hard for me to say for sure how big that pie is, because particularly with philanthropic funding, what agencies get each year is going to change. What's available to be through foundational grants and things like that is going to change every year. We actually got a large amount of funding through the Garcia Family Foundation, the community, in the last couple of years that never existed before, but that really increased the amount of prevention dollars available in our community. But that's, you know, not necessarily typical. It doesn't mean that will happen again next year. So I think the pie size is always kind of changing.
But it sounds like it's pretty significant. Like there is significant funding and other resources out there that are not captured in the COC funding.
Yeah. So COC is like 14.5 million. ESG, I think the city only gets about 400,000, just over that. I think the county gets less, and then some comes in from the state. But let's say, I think the state gets actually 1.8 million. So maybe a couple million dollars from that. And then, you know, all the philanthropic money, that may be another couple million dollars. So I would say COC is still a lion's share of the funding, but maybe closer to a half or a third.
And that other funding, how well plugged into COC and what y'all are doing, how well are those other sources plugged into kind of the infrastructure and you know, what COC is coordinating?
That's a great question. I think that it depends what you mean by plugged in. So we have a lot of participation from these different agencies in the different committees and our general counsel and things like that. And we do our best to share resources. We have an online Basecamp. I don't know if you're familiar with that service, but it's kind of an online message board. And we have one just for resource sharing that has a couple hundred people in it. And so there's agency representation of the agencies that are receiving a lot of these different funding dollars. But that there could be improved communication about like who exactly has what and how that impacts our community. Because I know that there's some DES funded projects I could tell you about, you know, some from OPCS that support kids aging out of foster care. But I'm sure there's others, and what do those look like, and you know, what agencies are getting that funding. And so there is some knowledge, but there could be improved communication within TBCH about that.
Got it. And then, you know, I think as a commission, one of the things that we have talked about a lot is, you know, based on our limited time and capacity, just as commissioners and whatnot, you know, what can we do to have the biggest impact as a commission? And I guess my question to you would be, you know, I don't think that we want to come in and like, you know, gum up the works more, right? Because there are a lot of people working in this space. But like, what are some ways that you think that this commission could support your work, move it forward, just have a positive impact, maybe in a place that you identified where, you know, nobody's really doing a whole lot of work, where, you know, we could make an impact. I guess my question is just how can it, coming into this space and trying to make an impact, what would be the best way for the commission to do that, in your opinion?
Yeah, so this may seem really basic, but to be frank, when we talk about homelessness and kind of what are the on-ramps onto homelessness, one of the main contributors to that is the lack of affordable housing. And so I think the commission is in a much better place than TPCH is to be working towards policies that will develop additional affordable housing and encourage the creation of affordable housing in our community. And that goes to, you know, the prevention that we were talking about with Ray. If there's additional affordable housing in our community, then more folks have the opportunity to be housed there and they don't become homeless. And so I think that developing that is a really big piece that the commission can be contributing. I think when it comes to things like prevention, I think that that's a need that we have identified. That's a need that you all have identified. And so I think that when it comes to talking to mayor and council or advising them from your perspective, I think that that's perhaps a place where we see an overlapping need between our two boards that could be kind of emphasizing that same message that there's a need for additional prevention funding and a centralized system within our community to improve the availability of prevention funding and also to reduce the number of people who then ever become homeless. And so I think that that's an area where we could have some kind of overlapping messaging and priorities for mayor and council.
I see you, Mindy. I've got one more question. In terms of prevention, I mean, we talk about prevention a lot, and obviously, you know, having resources available for people who, you know, maybe can't make ends meet or have an emergency or whatever the case may be, you know, that seems pretty obvious. But what other things are going on in the community that could be prevented to keep people from becoming homeless? Things outside of just like, hey, here's $500 for whatever you need to get through this month. But like, what other things are happening in the community that are causing people to be homeless that could be prevented, that you can kind of put your finger on?
Yeah, and I'm happy also to have Ann or Allison or others from HCD hop in and answer. But when I think about other kind of on-ramps into homelessness, another concern is people being released from institutions, whether that's people being released from hospitals who don't have anywhere else to go, particularly who don't have a place to go where they can receive any level of kind of lower level of medical care. And then also from the justice system and people being released, and from the behavioral health system as well, people may have found themselves in an institution and then after their time's done there, they don't have anywhere to go to at the end. And so I know that there's, you know, this is not at all to say that nothing in our community is happening around that, because Pima County in particular has the transition center outside the jail. We actually fund some housing navigators that work at the transition center. So there is stuff happening, but those are other kind of on-ramps into homelessness. And so I think that if we can create solutions for those types of things, whether that's additional shelter beds that are, you know, saved for folks leaving those institutions, or if that's greater connection and deeper involvement with our hospitals and our EDs to kind of build a referral process. You know, I think there are ways that we can talk about prevention in multiple different ways.
Thank you for that. Go ahead, Mindy.
I love that you're talking about this. And my point where I am seeing the biggest issue is that people are not receiving the behavioral health judicial support and substance use recovery supports in our community. And the majority of individuals whom are unhoused are individuals who require and would benefit with those services, but they're not available.
Yeah, agreed. There's a big shortage of behavioral health providers in our community, for sure. Yeah.
Because you can have affordable housing, but and if you have no way of knowing how to take care of yourself, mm-hmm. you're not in the housing anymore.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a both and situation. You know, I think that the homelessness crisis is really a result of many broken systems. And so I think that behavioral health and substance use support and just the kinds of support that is actually funded through insurance, I think that all of those are challenges for our community and things that can contribute to homelessness for sure.
All right, y'all, we're a little bit over time. Are there any last questions before we move on to our next agenda item?
Thank you so much, Kat.
Yeah,
thank you all so much for having me today. Please feel free to reach out. My email is somewhere in the chat, and Rachel can always get a hold of me as well. So thank you all.
Go ahead, Jim. I see your hand.
Hey, I apologize. I have to drop off here in about 7 minutes for a charity event. But I just wanted to, I want to say just a couple quick things about our next topic, if that's okay, before they give their presentation.
Yeah, go ahead.
That'd be okay. So I think this is the next agenda item is the Pima County proposal to have a property tax increase with the money being set aside for affordable housing. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. So you guys have all heard me talk ad nauseum about how difficult it is to get projects done in Tucson. We have a problem where our area median incomes are 20% below Phoenix, but our costs are about 5% higher. And it creates a ton of issues in terms of attracting a lot of the affordable housing developers that come to Tucson. The bigger problem right now, though, is that the sources of gap funding are drying up. So the State Housing Trust Fund has essentially been eliminated. I know HUD is looking very closely right now at cutting CBDG and home funds. And so it's going to become more and more important to figure out how to get sources of gap funding locally. So on the surface, I think from what I've heard about this property tax increase, it seems like it's in line with our recommendation that we made to Mayor and Council about a bond initiative, because we talked about that happening through property taxes. In talking with some people in SALC about this proposal, the initial feedback and the pushback that I heard was that, and I don't know if this is true or not, but the feedback was that the Pima County property taxes are already some of the highest in the state. So I think that that is a question that needs to be addressed. I think that the business community needs to be engaged, because we just saw recently with Prop 313 that when the city did not engage the business community coalesced and started a funding campaign to oppose it. And it would be better to bring them on board early, get their input early, so that they're not actively opposing something like this. So that's my two cents. But on the surface, it seems like it is a potential source that would make a significant impact in terms of our ability to develop new affordable housing projects in Tucson. So that's it.
Thanks so much, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay, guys, I'm going to drop off. Have a good rest of your meeting.
You too. Okay, next, well, Jim kicked us off. Pima County Housing Initiatives is up next, and I believe, Nicole Fife, you are up.
Thank you. Nicole Fife with the Pima County Administrator's Office. And I'm just going to ask David, because Jim was alluding to the property tax increase proposal, and David was going to present that after mine. I was just going to talk quickly about the planning process. David, does it make sense for me to go over the planning process quickly first?
Yeah.
Okay. I think so. All right.
Yeah, because ultimately the hope that Supervisor Hines has is that this 3 cents policy fits into what Nicole's presenting here, which is the longer, more in-depth process where we know at the end of the day that part of the answer will be more funding.
Thank you. Can everybody see slides on a screen? Or not?
We can, but they're not in presenter mode.
How about that?
Yep, that's great.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, and I know, I think Anne mentioned this at your retreat too, and this is really building off of the Echo Northwest Housing Needs Assessment that you've probably heard a lot of by now between the cities and the towns and Pima County, and looking at, you know, what are our housing needs over 20 years and also the current housing shortage. So we're really getting at inventory. So when Kat was talking about, you know, what are the critical en routes to ending homelessness and how important the supply of housing is, and especially affordable housing, this is really getting at that. And so the purpose of the plan is to address the current housing shortage and additional housing units that are needed over a defined time period. And that's still to be defined. So we're working with our county housing commission that includes 3 representatives from the city of Tucson, as well as your housing staff, our housing staff, our development services staff, and anybody else, which is why we're coming to you to say, you know, how do you want to participate in this planning process? It's sort of a higher level simplified plan. You know, what are the most effective local strategies? And Jim mentioned gap funding. So that's probably one of our most important strategies here. How using that strategy and a couple of others, how much would it cost to actually close the affordable housing gap? And then as a community, how much are we willing to pay of that, right? So that's going to be a really big number when we cost that out, and Eco Northwest is helping us cost that out. And maybe we're only meeting 5% of that now. You know, could we be meeting 20%, 30%, you know, what is the comfort level? What is the level that this community, cities and towns and the county think that we can commit to and build an actual funding plan with measurable targets over a 5 to 10 year, you know, process? So that's what we're talking about here. And I just wanted to show you, so this is our commission here, and we meet monthly. And their goal is going to be to really achieve a baseline understanding of these strategies and make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors. We then have a working group, which is kind of like a subcommittee of our housing commission that also includes some of your housing staff to help sort of build up that, you know, what does the commission need to know about these strategies? What does the Board of Supervisors need to know? What does county admin need to know? Like decision makers, and need to understand if we're going to ask for, significant funding and commitments and so on. And then I have your commission here because we would like to welcome you to participate in however you want to participate. So if you want to attend our regional housing commission meetings or working groups, if you want to just regularly receive comments back here, however you wish to participate. Below that is the topics. So back on March 21st, we started with everybody presenting their housing needs assessment. So the city of Tucson also presented theirs, and roughly you're half of the numbers of the countywide needs. So when we talk about a need for 116,000 units over 20 years, the city of Tucson has about half of that need. And about half of that is on the affordable housing end, or housing affordable to individuals and families under 80% of the area median income. And that also includes 8,000 units of housing for people exiting homelessness. And then we talked about the guiding principles and the timeline, which I'm showing you today at our April 18th meeting. At our May 16th meeting, we'll be talking about the first strategy, which has been one of our most successful strategies recently, both the city and the county, in using gap funding to develop affordable housing. And so what does that look like? What do we need to be aware of if we're going to spend significantly more in that area? You know, what are the constraints, the LIHTC constraints and other things that we need to be aware of? In June, we'll be talking about preservation of affordable housing. So although the housing needs assessment is really more, it's increasing inventory, we have to also preserve the affordable housing we have. In July, we're going to be talking specifically about
which is, it's probably gap funding for the development of housing, but focused on the homeless units, right? The 8,000 units needed for folks exiting homelessness. And that strategy is probably the only strategy that also needs to include an operational component, because I think, Mindy, like you were saying, there's, it doesn't work without it, right? You really need to. So that's going to be a more expensive per unit cost for those particular units. In August, we're going to be talking about market rate housing. So we are very aware that increasing the overall supply of housing will also have benefits, also zoning changes and things like that. We need to continue to improve, because they improve all the other strategies. Then we'll review the strategies, identify measurable targets, review funding options, draft the plan, and then sort of true those up with our Eco Northwest housing study. So with that, I am going to stop sharing and ask if you have any questions, and really invite you to think about how you may want to be a part of this planning effort.
Good question. I'm thinking about it. That's a good question.
One thing I did want to chime in from city's perspective. So a reminder on sort of history, when the Commission on Equitable Housing Development presented to mayor and council, and then the mayor came to the retreat, not this last one, but the one before, you know, she did, as there were questions about wanting there to be more resources and more emphasis on housing, the mayor was like, hey, get with Pima County to try to, like, this should be done at a regional approach. And so really appreciate Nicole and Pima County organizing this, coordinating this, and also feel like it would be helpful to have this commission also weigh in and sort of make sure that as this moves forward, it's meeting kind of the goals and intent that you all have laid out.
I don't know what my question is exactly, but I think one of the things that's confusing for me is, you know, the city being such a big part of the region, you know, as you mentioned, like kind of half of the need is in the city of Tucson. You know, what kind of coordination is happening between the city and the county, and like, how are the city's plans? And I always have a hard time squaring how the city and the county are working together, quite frankly. So there you go. How are you all working together?
We are working together quite a bit. So we have technical advisory teams that are meeting regularly before these working group teams. And so Sarah Megason, Andrew, and I'm going to forget Andrew's last name, have been very much involved in those. I mean, I think you have, you know, even more staff dedicated, or certainly have more staff dedicated, and lots of expertise on housing development. And in some ways, we're newer to that. So we have really appreciated the expertise that the city is bringing to these groups. So I would say actively involved.
Thank you for that. Anybody else, any thoughts or questions? I mean, another thing that, you know, I think we have been trying to do, but for whatever reason has not been successful, is our two housing commissions working together, the city and the county. It seems like we should be working together a lot more than we have been, which is basically none. So, you know, I don't know if that's something that, you know, the city and the county can help facilitate. I know we've been working on it, but I know that could be helpful, I think, to maybe bridge some gaps. Because, I mean, obviously, I think, you know, working on housing regionally is really the only way to make it work. And, you know, if we can make sure that we're working together in cooperation, I mean, as opposed to what I've seen with the RTA, which, you know, has been very challenging working together regionally. So, I'm glad to have y'all presenting to us today and, you know, actively seeking our involvement. So certainly something I think that we can talk about as a commission in terms of, you know, what the best way to be involved. And I guess maybe I would also, you know, ask y'all, in what way would it be most effective for our commission to work with y'all, support this effort? You know, what are some areas that we could have an impact?
I mean, it's specifically if you have members of your commission that would want to attend some of our meetings, you know, I mean, obviously, if a lot of you wanted to attend, we would have to jointly notice that. But you know, if we make sure you are aware of the dates and the topic areas, and then it would be great. And if you want to get involved even earlier in the process, we can send the working group dates around. And if any of you have a passion for one of those particular areas, please join us.
Great.
And then just quickly, before I turn this on to David, Jim made a comment about high property taxes, and we had sent information to our board recently about this, but every year the Arizona Department of Revenue looks at tax burden, like across the counties. And so they look at both sales tax burden and property tax burden for each of the 15 counties. So for the, you know, and divide by population. And in, so when you consider both, the, because county doesn't have a sales tax, right? So that's why we have a high property tax, because we don't have a sales tax. And then city has a sales tax, but almost no property tax. And so when you align that all up, we're middle of the pack. We're seven out of the 15 counties in tax burden. So that was just to get to Jim's question.
Thank you for that. Mindy, did you have a question or comment?
No, you asked it for me. Thank you.
Okay. David, you've got more for us?
Well, yes, I do. And I was just, you know, as Nicole was talking and inviting folks, of course, please do the Regional Affordable Housing Commission, which includes three representatives from the city of Tucson, one from each of the other smaller jurisdictions. But they meet typically on, I think it's the third or fourth Friday. It's all here at the link I put in the chat. And they meet at 8:30 in the morning. So it's 8:30 in the morning. They're usually done by 10 or 10:30. Well, no later than 10:30, sometimes earlier. But I do think, since Nicole has laid out, like, on this meeting date, we're going to be discussing this topic, and on this meeting date, this strategy and this strategy, that those are really four right there, the May, June, July, and August meetings that I think would be tremendous to have lots of membership from your commission there as well. And if a special notice needs to go out saying there may be a quorum, then, you know, the city can send out that special notice. But that should prevent whoever is interested from the Equitable Housing Commission to be able to come and participate, call to the public, answer questions, whatever. My only other thought on that, Nicole, and I don't know how this might work, is that if the city's commission also meets monthly, that maybe for those four topics, those strategy discussions, there could be a similar sort of presentation discussion at this commission at their meeting. But so I also wanted to, I know you guys received this ahead of time, but I'm just going to, for everybody's benefit, I'm going to also drop Supervisor Hines's, hopefully that worked, Supervisor Hines's proposal here of 3 cents for affordable housing. I've just put that in the chat as well. And, you know, where this came from really is the county more about a year ago did a whole RFP to get a housing needs assessment done. And the first phase of that housing needs assessment, which was done by Eco Northwest, is done. And it gave us some really valuable sort of 30,000 foot view data. And while they continue to do their work to really drill down at, you know, much more specific data by census tract and different kinds of housing and different kinds of demographics per in different parts of the county, as they drill down on that, what we do already have is this higher level number. And in particular, I want to highlight, Supervisor Hines highlights on the bottom of page one of his policy, that what the Eagle Northwest study says is that Pima County, you know, writ large Pima County, by 2030, we need to build 23,292 additional units of affordable housing for residents who are at or below 60% of the area median income. By 2035, so 10 years from now, that's 38,584 units. And ultimately, they're looking at a 20-year horizon. So by 2045, 62,771 units. But just looking at that number of 38,584 units, affordable housing units that are needed in the next decade, again, for folks who are at 60% AMI below, that includes people who are currently experiencing homelessness. It includes making up for more than a decade of underproduction after the Great Recession. And it includes what Eco Northwest has estimated to be anticipated growth in our community over the next decade, of folks who are in that income bracket of 0 to 60% area median income. So that's where we get to, okay, 38,500 or 38,600 units needed in the next decade. Supervisor Hines knows that under any scenario, and Jim Toefel just, I think that was that Jim Toefel who was speaking on the phone? Just said this, you know, under any scenario, we're going to have to lean into local funding because under the best case scenario, you know, we might have hoped for more federal funding. That's not a reasonable assumption. And then as Jim also pointed out, you know, the fact that Governor Hobbs was able to get $150 million for the Housing Trust Fund in her first budget is not a feat that's likely to be repeated as the state is looking at a very lean budget year as well. So Supervisor Hines' intent here is to say, look, let's not wait for the cavalry from the state or the federal government to save us. Let's take care of ourselves and let's do this in a way that's equitable, responsible. Incremental, you know, looking at fiscal 26, it would be this kind of hit, fiscal 27, fiscal 28. So if you look at the sort of page two of the proposed policy there, what this is it's an estimate. This is an estimate of how much could be raised countywide to be devoted towards affordable housing preservation and construction, as well as efforts to keep people housed, which could include things like weatherization support. How much could be raised each year and what it would cost to the median homeowner, which is sort of that middle column that's got the, like it says, $2.35 times 3 equals $7.06. So what this is based on is what we know to be the limited assessed value of a home in Pima County right now is $235,000. Per state law, we all get assessed on, you know, if you're a homeowner, you get assessed on 10% of your limited assessed value. So $23,500 is what you actually get taxed on. And so, you know, one penny per $100 in net assessed value is about $2.35. So what this shows you is that for that median homeowner who has a home that's valued at a limited value of $235,000, they're paying, you know, every penny in the county property primary tax is $2.35 on the year. So 3 cents would be $7.06 on the year. Really important to also note here, and I'm not sure if Supervisor Hines put this in this policy itself. He's mentioned it many times from the dais, but just so everybody's on the same page, this policy is also based on the knowledge that in the state of Arizona, the Constitution, and this was passed by the voters decades ago, the Constitution limits how much your limited value can go up 1 year over the neck or year over year. So in bad years, it can go down. If there's a recession and we saw the housing crash of 06, 07, 08, limited values went down. But in terms of these last 5 years, those of you who are homeowners like me, we've seen our actual values go up by 10%, 12% a year, et cetera. But by state constitution, the limited value, that is the value that the tax rate is based on, can only go up by 5.0% and no more any given year. So when you look at this chart, that's what that third column, fourth column looks like is if limited assessed value for fiscal 26 is 235,000 and it can only go up by 5%, this chart then assumes that it goes up by 5% each and every year to the point where you get to fiscal 35 and adding 5% a year, that same median assessed value home is worth limited assessed value of $364,872. And so the next column over of what this would cost the average homeowner, that's over the previous year. So next year would cost $7 more than they'd otherwise be paying. The following year would cost $7.41 more than fiscal 26 cost them. The next year, $7.78 more than fiscal 27 had cost them. And so when you go down to the bottom of the chart and you look at the 10-year picture, after 10 years, when the policy sunsets, because this would be a policy that sunsets after fiscal 25, the average homeowner at that point would be paying $88.78 more per year than they are today, fiscal 25, which amounts to about $7.40 more per month. This is 10 years down the road. And as a community, we will have raised, we believe, $207 million to be devoted exclusively towards preservation, construction of affordable housing, and strategies that keep people housed. So one other thing important to highlight about this proposed policy is that this is just a policy to say we need dedicated revenues. This is how we get dedicated revenues. How they're expended every year would be an iterative process between the Regional Affordable Housing Commission and stakeholders and the Board of Supervisors. So each and every year, the Regional Affordable Housing Commission would say, okay, just like they're doing right now for their fiscal 26 budget, they would say, this is how much we want to devote towards gap funding to construct new or preserve existing. This is how much we want to devote towards programs and initiatives that keep people housed. And they would do that process each and every year. So when we say in this proposed policy that we could potentially build 12,235 additional units of affordable housing for those lowest income members of our community, that's if every single dollar were allocated every single year to the gap funding for more affordable housing. That's not necessarily a given. And this policy doesn't attempt to say this is how it should be spent each year. It's mainly a policy about saying we need more revenue for this. We need it on both construct more, preserve existing, and we need additional funds for keeping people housed. And this is an equitable, fair sort of incremental way to, as a community, come together and do that in a way that moves the needle. Because if we were, for example, to spend it all on affordable housing units and build 12,235 additional units, that's a third of that need right there that the Eco Northwest study points to for this 60% AMI or below group. That's a third of that overall need over the next decade. And when you, the policy does talk about this, when you lay over that, the zoning reforms that are already happening within the city of Tucson and within the county, and you lay on top of that other initiatives that the city and the other smaller jurisdictions might do to encourage more, missing middle housing, et cetera, then we have a really strong chance at actually meeting that need of 38,000 additional units in our community over the next decade. So that's really the purpose of the plan. Again, this would be a Board of Supervisors policy, which means that to pass, it would just need a majority of the members of the Board of Supervisors. That also means that at any point in the future, a simple majority of the Board of Supervisors could amend the plan, could terminate the plan. When you look on our website at all our BOS policies, you'll see that at the very last page, they have date it was originally passed and then any amended dates. And some policies have been amended multiple times. So because this would be a policy of the board, it could be amended by a simple majority of the board at any time. And what it would do is get the ball rolling this year, fiscal 26, by adding $3.6 million to what the county would otherwise be spending on affordable housing in fiscal 26, which is $5 million. So it takes us from $5 million to $8.6 million this coming fiscal year, and then more each year from there. If the board passes it, then it simply, it can be worked into the budget before the board passes the final budget. So I'd love to entertain questions that commissioners or others might have.
Thanks, David. Go ahead, Al.
Hi, David. Thanks for that presentation. It's something brand new to me. I didn't know anything about it. I'm glad to know about it. I'm just interested, and I'm generally in favor of it. I didn't hear anything that you said that I didn't like. So just to say that, so I'm not complaining about anything. But my question is, it seems odd to me that the policy of a Board of Supervisors can raise property taxes. Is that really how it works?
Yes, and I'm glad you asked that question, because at the end of the day, property taxes are just every taxing jurisdiction decides its primary and secondary rates. I mean, secondary is more or less based on your outstanding general obligation debt. So that's less of a choice. But your primary rate is a choice within state guidelines. And state guidelines say that our primary rate can only be X, but that's significantly higher than this. We've always been well under the state limit on what we can charge on the primary rate. But typically, it's something that is negotiated and lots of, conversations that start in September, October, November, and go all the way till the administrator sends out their recommended budget in April. And then usually at that point, the board doesn't touch it. But this is something that in previous years and in every year, the administrator can knock up or down a point. It's the primary property tax rate. It is at the discretion of the Board of Supervisors. And typically whatever the administration has proposed is what they've adopted. This would be saying, no, it's whatever the administration would otherwise propose plus 3 cents. But yes, it's fully within the purview of the Board of Supervisors to do it. And by the way, I should say the administrator also is coming up each and every year with the proposed primary property tax rate based on other policies the board has passed in years past. The PAYGO policy, the state cost shift policy, the policy around vacant positions that have been vacant more than 240 days, et cetera. Those are all policies that have been passed by the Board of Supervisors. I see Ray has a question.
Yeah, this might be a question for a little down the road, but I'm wondering about when you're talking about creating and preserving affordable housing units, if you're considering things like supporting residents in purchasing properties collectively, like to make those into permanently affordable units and not only into building new units?
I mean, here's what I would say. I can't imagine, based on the first 3 years of the GAP funding program, how we would spend $39 million in fiscal 35 just on GAP funding. I don't think that'd be possible. I don't think there's that much, that many projects that could be in the pipeline in one given year. So yes, I think each and every year there's that iterative process I mentioned earlier where the commission would be hearing from the community about their ideas. But we would know that next year it's 8.6, the following year it's 12.2. Just add 5 million to the figures that are in that third column from the right, because there is the 5 million base regardless, that's now part of the county's, you know, base budget. But yeah, we would know roughly what the dollar amount is of revenues each year going into it. And then it's that iterative process about how to best invest it in the overall goal of keeping people housed in a more affordable way.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Go ahead, Tisha.
Yeah, hi, David. How are you?
Hi. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. I just wanted to, first of all, thank Supervisor Hines for thinking this through, bringing it forward. You know, it's definitely something that if the ask is whether or not the commission support Jay, then I would ask that we do move forward with whether or not we would support. If the ask is just informational, then please let us know that. But it is so nice and refreshing to know that Supervisor Hines is specifically looking at affordable housing, because we do know there's going to be a significant gap in just doing what we currently do, let alone having the foresight to create a revenue source moving forward for what we know is going to be a difficult time, especially when you take this in the context of all the other departments that are likely to undergo cuts that impact all of us who work in community in poverty. So that's my thought. And whether or not David or Nicole, if there's any requests that you want placed on the table for all of us to consider.
I mean, I would just say, I don't know how this was agendized would allow for a vote. Certainly a vote of this commission would be very, very helpful, because this is in front of the board next Tuesday on their regular agenda. But regardless, each and every person here can also write to the board. And the easiest way to write to all five board members and make sure they see it is that email I just put in the chat, the COB_mail@pima.gov. So if the commission wants to take a vote, if you're allowed to take a vote based on how this was agendized, a vote of support would be very, very, very helpful. And individual letters would be helpful as well.
Are we basically talking about voting now? Because, I mean, obviously we could do that, but we could also, would it be as effective to bring it up at the next meeting and have a deeper conversation? Would that be helpful as well, or is that too late?
I don't want to push. I mean, whatever the commission, you know, it's what the commission's comfortable with. But this is on the agenda for the Board of Supervisors this coming Tuesday, which is May 6th. And, you know, the way the budget cycle works, May 20th, the following meeting, is their last chance to adopt anything that would raise the property tax rate. After May 20th, they can lower the rate before they finalize the budget in June. But anything that raises it, basically May 6th is the real deadline, as far as I can see, for raising the property tax rate over what came out in the recommended budget last week.
Go ahead, Mindy.
Is there any reason why we would not do a vote to support PMA?
Yeah. Okay. And before there's any kind of vote, obviously, there's still lots of questions, so I'm happy to answer any more questions.
Go ahead, Alan, if you're done, Mindy.
I just have a comment just to kind of add to the conversation. Because of my practice area being bankruptcy, the median income is a is an important part of the process. So I'm just aware of the median income is for Arizona. And for a one-person household right now, as of April 1st, it went to $70,000. For a four-person household, it's $113,000, the median income. So 60% of those numbers, you know, to be able to afford to buy a house is, you know, I think we all know without really thinking about it very much, it's not possible.
And I should say the commission, the Regional Affordable Housing Commission, has as their charge with the gap funding each year, that it can go towards home ownership opportunities or rental opportunities, but none affordable in either case.
And my additional comment is that we're working on the, I don't know if this is the right way of putting it, but the buying side, the providing money to people to be able to buy. And there's two, from my limited information, two components into why there's a shortage of housing. One is that not enough has been built, but the other is that the cost of housing has increased dramatically compared to incomes. And so the income side of this is something we can't do anything about as a commission or as a county or as a city. So that's all we're left with is doing things like what we're trying here. But that's the heart of the problem for me is incomes, just too low.
Any more questions? I would entertain a motion. I don't know, Tisha, if you've got a motion off the top of your head.
So moved to vote on to approve Supervisor Hines' recommendation of a increased property tax of 3 cents, I believe. That's been proposed and as we've heard it here today.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
My second.
We have a second from Mindy Bernstein. All those in favor?
Hey, I'm sorry. Can I just clarify? Tisha, sure. Would you mind sort of reframing that a little bit as if this is a motion to support this? Would you mind amending it to say it's a motion to support the proposed 3 cents for affordable housing policy?
Yes. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Just what David said.
Look at that.
All right, so we have a motion and we have a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay or no or whatever you want to say. Any abstentions? All right, the motion passes. Thank you so much. Just in the interest of time, and since we have voted to support, I would like to move on. We've got just a couple of more things that hopefully we can get through in the next couple of minutes. So with that, thank you, David. Thank you. And Nicole. Yes.
Just thank you guys very, very much. That support is really huge. And if you do want to write in, please do. Thank you guys so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Nicole. Really appreciate it. Next up is Anne. Anne, you've got some housing trust fund updates. I don't know if it would make sense maybe just to, you know, speak very briefly. I know that this is a topic that we wanted to get into as a commission, but obviously because of the time constraints about what David and Nicole presented, we chose to trim this down pretty dramatically. So with that, go ahead, Anne.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. So do appreciate that at the retreat, we talked about the housing trust fund dollars and mayor and council asking for the commission's recommendations on how to spend what's there now and really sort of revamp the housing trust fund for the future. We had intended to have a longer item, as Jay had mentioned, but given the urgency on some of the other items and really trying to follow up from the retreat while it's fresh in everyone's brain, I did say I think the larger discussion could wait till June. My goal for June is to bring some work with staff and happy to take any input from all of you, some draft policies, procedures around the Housing Trust Fund, since technically this body is the oversight committee for that. And so I will be prepared to do that in June. in the meantime, I know we're short on time, but we've had some guests that have stayed on and would love to give them a chance to talk about some things they're hoping that you all will consider as you're looking to make the recommendations and looking at the policies and procedures. So I know Ward 3 council member Dahl's chief of staff, Katie Bolger, is on, and a couple more. And I did alert them that this was a short item, but did want to at least give them a chance to say what they're thinking in advance of next month's bigger discussion about them.
Hey, everybody. Thank you. I know it's been a long meeting and you have a plate. I'm Katie Bolger. I am the chief of staff for Ward 3 council member Kevin Dahl. And the reason I'm here is he would like you all to consider using some of the housing trust fund money for direct aid to keep people in houses. And you touched on it a lot earlier, but a little context. 75% of the calls and emails we get at Ward 3 are related to homelessness, either people needing services and wanting housing or people complaining about camps. And we work very closely with the Opportunity Safety and Wellness. And on this call right now, we have Kristen Woodall, who is a care coordinator. It's her job to go out and engage people in camps and try to get them housed. And we also have Lee Hopkins, and she's a program manager. Here's what we found out. We had some great President Biden, the American Recovery Act money, which is now gone. But what we did with that is we gave $30,000 to CASHU, the Community Safety Wellness Program. And that was to use for immediate need. And in the last week, a few examples of the things that we've approved, we paid $1,000 for a woman and her three children. She has a job, but she needed to move. She could no longer pay her rent, but she could not afford the down payment and the upfront, the first month rent. We paid that $1,000, got her and her family into housing. Another call we got this week was someone who was facing eviction because their electricity was turned off and you can't live in your house without electricity. We paid the $300 TEP bill, kept them in their housing. And we have more stories like this, but what we found, and already know this, it's way cheaper to keep people housed than getting people into housing once they're home. And so this little bit of money, and I think Ray said earlier, how do we stop the flow of people going into homelessness? This is one of the ways. And what we do that money, we don't. So if people need help, they don't have to go through an agency or apply. They are directly contacted by our care coordinator, who can make that instantaneous decision. Should we spend money on them or not? And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Kristen, because she has some more examples of how we could use $100,000 from you guys to keep people in their homes today. And Kristen, if you're on, if you could introduce yourself. Kristen. Okay. Maybe Kristen's not on. There she is.
Hi. I just wanted to give a couple more examples of how we can immediately assist people to stay housed and get housed if they are unhoused. For one example, we paid for a gentleman's breathalyzer to be removed from his car because he didn't have the money to do it. He had to choose between paying his rent and getting the breathalyzer taken out. We buy shoes for individuals who are ready to go back to work but don't have the uniform. There was a woman who her Social Security check came in late, which happened recently to a lot of people. We paid $100 to her so that it would bridge that gap so that she wouldn't go into eviction proceedings. It's just with the ARPA money that we received from Ward 3, it was astounding how much we were able to accomplish to keep people housed. So thanks for listening to me.
So basically, this is the end of the meeting, and we just wanted to have, again, the ask from the Ward 3 office is for your consideration for $100,000 to go to CASHU for them to help citywide all the people that they come in contact with to keep them in their housing. And I'm happy to answer any questions or come back next June. Thanks.
Thank you. I think we may have lost quorum, y'all. Can I do a quick check? From my count, we do not have quorum anymore.
I'm also counting six.
Okay. So does that mean that we just kind of have to wrap up at this point, or what does that mean for us?
I'd say wrap up, but I would say hold on a motion. But I do want to give, as people have waited a long time, just a chance to ask questions.
Okay, go ahead. Tisha and Mindy, I think you guys both had questions.
You know what? I was actually going to move us further along, but knowing that we don't have quorum, I don't have questions. I think it's important that this is the ward that has come directly to us. It sounds like everyone is in exigent circumstances. And so I would just, you know, we can't obviously do any motions right now because we don't have quorum, but I'd ask that it be set on the next agenda and be taken up as a priority agenda item.
Thanks, Tisha. Go ahead, Mindy.
I wanted to share some of my personal experience at the agency where I worked. We wrote a grant to the Community Foundation to assist with first and last month's rent for our clients as a loan. We assisted over 15 people who would not have been able to move into housing, and most everyone paid back their loan. It's just and a little bit more of an anecdotal view of what was just presented and how much I support that.
Thanks, Mindy. Go ahead, Alan.
I'm not sure I've fully understood what is being offered. So I guess one question is, they're asking us, and I know we can't vote on it now, to use the small amount of money we have in our trust fund to that we can administer to put into this project. And I understand the sense of that. We need to kind of flesh it out some more. But this is more personal. I have, you know, clients who need this kind of help, you know, even $100 for a utility bill. I didn't understand where they go to apply for this.
Okay. If they are interacting with one of the care coordinators in the city of Tucson, Kristen, they've been referred either through a council office or they've called 311. So the city, we're referring, anyone we come in contact to, we refer them to Cashew. If you're just somebody out on the street looking for help, I mean, you could be calling PCAA or different agencies. This is for people deal with council offices and it's city contacts that we refer them to.
Okay. So Cashew would be the main one that they should approach initially.
Though. Cashew is what we're asking for the money to go to, because those are our outreach people. Kristen goes out on the street on a weekly basis and deals with people. So when she's offering resources, she has the money to back it up and say, oh, you need $50 to get your birth certificate? Yes, I can help you. So it's instant help with the people she's dealing with, is how that works. It's not necessarily coordinating with other agencies. It's us.
Hey, thanks.
If that helps.
Thanks, everybody. We can definitely put this on the agenda for our next commission meeting. Yeah, obviously, we were going to talk about this quite a bit more, but just had some other business that was a little bit pressing. So with that, we're almost 10 minutes over. We have also lost quorum. Are there any other last minute questions or comments before we wrap up tonight? Because it seems like without quorum, we kind of need to do that. All right, seeing no other questions or comments, I don't know, do we need to do anything? I mean, it seems like the meeting's already kind of over. Do we need to, I mean, we can't make a motion and vote, so.
You can just say see you later.
Yeah, I think we just adjourn.
All right, well, thanks everybody. Obviously we had a lot to cover, a lot of great presentations. Thank you for coming to the meeting, sharing, and we will see you next time.
Hey, Jay. Sorry, before we do adjourn, I did have a quick question. Are subcommittees meeting in May?
Yes.
Maybe this isn't a question without quorum.
If you look on the agenda for the meeting today, the subcommittees will be meeting in May, and the times and dates are on there. So
perfect. Thank you. And really quickly too, all the city, county, and working group updates that we had included in the agenda, those are all in the detailed agenda if folks are interested, just in lieu of covering them.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Rachel. And with that, we are done. Have a good night, y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.